Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have with us today a man who has written a marvelous mystery. And for those of you who are regular listeners, you know that most of my material that I review and that we discuss on the air is nonfiction. But every once in a while, I get a piece of material that I just go, whoa, this is really unique and different. And that is what happened when I got the book, The Reiki Man. And our guest today is Dominic James, and he's in England. Welcome, Dominic.
Hi, Donna.
Well, I know it's pretty late for you in England. It's after 11 o'clock at night for you, and I'm so grateful that you were able to join us, because your book, The Reiki Man, is really quite fascinating. Now, you yourself are a Reiki master. When did you get involved with this phenomenal healing factor that has gained and continues to gain popularity here in the U.S.?
Well, I got involved probably about 7 years ago. I first went to my first Reiki session. I was working in a factory here in England, and I was having a few troubles concentrating mentally, and one of the guys who I worked with, he had chronic back problems, and he came in one day and he, you know, was completely cured, well, almost. He was bouncing around the factory, and I asked him what had happened, and he said he had been to this guy who'd done Reiki on him. So it piqued my interest, so I went and had a go, and I haven't really looked back since.
Now, how long have you been involved with this technique?
I actually started doing Reiki myself probably 2007. So about four or five years, 2006, 2007, I think I had my first attunement.
Wow. So actually, you've been involved with it a relatively short period of time.
Yeah. Like I said, I went for my first actual Reiki session. I had Reiki sessions for probably about 3 or 4 years before I decided to do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I needed to. I don't know. It's one of those things, Reiki. You need to feel comfortable with the position you're at, and you know when the right time is to actually do it yourself, I think.
After
4 years, I thought, well, yeah, I'll have a go at this myself and see what happens.
You have a little bit of history about Reiki, and for those who are listening that may not know about this, it originated in Japan and is a healing practice. But you also brought out a point of information. I'm not especially knowledgeable about it, but you say at the heart of Reiki are what are considered sacred symbols that connect the practitioner to his or her energy source. And there are four main symbols used in the traditional Usui of Reiki. Tell us about those symbols.
Yeah, there's four main symbols. There's the master symbol, which is really only used by Reiki masters. But there's sort of three levels of Reiki. At the start, there's level one, where you don't use symbols at all. Level two, where you learn the three symbols, which is the Choku Rei symbol, which is the power symbol, and the Honsha Sei Shonen, which is the long distance symbol, and the Sehei Ki, which is the mental symbols, the sort of emotional well-being. And you learn those on the second level. On the third level, you learn the master symbol. But they each have different properties. As I said, the power symbol is sort of your most basic one, which charges you. the Sahe Ki, which is the emotional symbol, that will deal with your mental problems and your state of mind. And the long distance symbol is used for healing people at distances when you can't be with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the master symbol is adds extra power to your healing once you've learnt the other ones. And that also is part of when you can attune other people to Reiki as well.
You also mention in your book that there is a legend that there are actually 300 symbols that are hidden in a temple in either Tibet or India. Nobody seems to know too much about it other than this story is out there. And the symbols will only be released by the monks that guard them when the human race is ready. Now, that has a lot of mystique and mystery to it. Can you tell us a little bit more about that story?
Well, it's actually just something I read, and I think it was in one of Diane Stein's books, but I'm not actually sure where I picked it up now. But I read it somewhere, and it just intrigued me as to, you know, what could these symbols do, what would they be, and what would the story behind them be. So I think that's probably what led me to, you know, think about writing the book. And obviously, with all the public's interest in symbols, with the Dan Brown stuff coming out and a lot of other books at the same time, it just seemed to fit. So I took that story that I'd heard and sort of expanded on it to see what I thought, what could possibly happen and what the symbols could actually do, what properties they would have.
Well, it really is fascinating because, for those of you listening, this is a murder mystery that has so many twists and turns to it, and that is literally and figuratively. It is really intriguing, and what I was amazed about is how you incorporated certain symbols into the book itself. And the story begins with a billionaire who is 43 years of age. He's in a library. There is a person who is Asian, dressed like a ninja, black head to toe, is in his office and actually can paralyze Mulholland, with just doing certain motions. It's like a type of hypnosis. And he's looking for something very special, and Mulholland doesn't have it. And he ends up dead because he didn't answer the question correctly. And that is how this begins. And you have this symbol in the book, which is a line with a particular flow to it that ends up going into circles. And this particular symbol is found. Okay. What does this symbol mean that you've got?
That first symbol, that's the power symbol, Choku Rei, which literally means put the power of the universe here. So it connects you with the energy of the universe. Whatever. I know it sounds fantastical, but that's the way Reiki works.
Well, I don't think it sounds too fantastic. And when I'm looking at the symbol, it reminds me of a snake that has followed the coiled pattern like is on a snail's shell. It reminds me of that. And I thought, this is interesting. So you start off with this mystery. Why would someone kill an individual? Because they have not answered the questions. And there is a woman by the name of Stella. She's part of the security setup. She's a former policewoman. And then there is an older police officer, Brennan, who works with Stella because Stella, she's supposed to be the bodyguard for Mulholland, and this happens on her watch, and it's pretty scary. So tell us how you got these two characters. Where did you draw them from?
Well, I'm not sure really. I think I wanted to start off with a female detective type. I wanted to put kind of a bit of romance in there as well. Obviously, we'll get onto that later. And the main, I wanted to keep the main character out of it for a few chapters. So I thought I'd bring in with the love interest first. Mm-hmm. And Stella's, I think she's sort of an amalgamation of people I've known over the years.
With
she's quite
Stella.
A headstrong character. Mm-hmm. And very intelligent, but also, I would imagine, quite vulnerable.
Well, you have the one that is dressed like the ninja, and I'll just use his code name, which is Ghost, because he goes someplace and he disappears. And this is someone who is very, very knowledgeable about Reiki. And this is someone that understands so many subtleties. And there is this box, this very, very special box that he is looking for. Where did you get the concept for the box, and what is this box representing?
Yeah, I think the concept for the box, I'm not really sure. It's quite difficult to explain where you get ideas from. They just come to you, really, I suppose. I think parchments and stuff like that had been done to death, really. And I wanted somewhere, obviously, where the symbols could be. And I thought maybe carving them on a box would suit the simplicity of where they came from. Obviously, I don't want to give too much away about what happens later in the story, but...
Oh, absolutely not. No, that's the
part.
Yeah.
Just a wooden box with the carvings on.
Right. So we have this mysterious box, and that's what the ghost is after. Then you bring in a character called Augie, who is a biker. And boy, what a character he is. You must have hung around with some really unique individuals or saw some special movies that portrayed this character, because he has a very unique persona. And he is a biker.
Augie's kind of an amalgamation of a few people. I actually know a few friends of mine. I do have some biker friends, and they're good solid guys.
Mm-hmm.
But he's quite a strange mixture. I mean, he's got a public school type of voice, very upper class English accent, but at the same time he's quite fierce and deadly, obviously.
Now, you have Charlo Miles, who belongs to an organization called the National Institute of Paranormal Studies, which is NIPS. So you're bringing in all of these different flavors and of environments, of thinking. And when I was reading this, I thought, you must really be pulling from a number of your own experiences, and they have compiled into these different characterizations. And Charlo Miles is a person that really is into the unique and unusual. And have you been involved with the Institute of Paranormal Studies in London?
No, I haven't. Not yet, but there is one, I think,
that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm.
But I haven't actually had anything to do with them myself. No, it's the Charlo Miles thing isn't based on anybody in particular. It's just sort of imagination, really, as what I imagined he would be like.
And then you have a creature called the Beast, and this is, I mean, I love all of these characters. They really are something else. And Titan is the true name of the Beast, and he is an animal to be reckoned with.
Yes. I'm not quite sure where I got that idea. I think perhaps my dad used to he was in Burma during the war, and his uncle had a pet panther out there. So I think I probably got the idea from Matt.
Mm-hmm. What I found to
I'm a fan of cats anyway, and I like the power, and because we have all these stories in England, from Cornwall and Devon about a beast that lives on the moors. I mean, I don't know whether nobody's ever caught it on camera or anything, but you know, there's always legends like that. So I thought I'd mix it in there. And also,
I think it's great.
The panther signifies a kind of primal energy as well, which I wanted to get through in the book.
Then you also go into, in many different places in the book, you go into detail about Reiki, and you talk about how the modern version of Reiki started in Japan in the late 19th century by Dr. Mikao Usui, a Tendai Buddhist priest. And tell us his story, because this is factual.
Yeah, well, I think the problem with the Usui story is that there's so many versions out there. But the one I've heard is that he went to Mount Karuna, I think it is, which is Horse Saddle Mountain, and he sat there for, I think, maybe 21 days or so, meditating, and these symbols came to him while he was there fasting. And when he'd finished meditating and he had these symbols, he went down to the villages and he started healing people.
And
that's how it started. But there's like I said, there's many variations on the story, so it's difficult to pinpoint what the truth is behind it. But
mm-hmm.
that's the main one that goes around. But he was definitely a person.
Mm-hmm. One of the aspects of the story that you share is that the Reiki masters use the symbols to attune their students, and that the symbols are drawn in the air by the master and enter the student through the crown chakra at the top of the head, and then the student is able to draw on the energy of the universe to heal himself and others. And that's the first time I had heard that, and I thought that is really fascinating because it has been passed down through the centuries that when a teacher finds their protege or the student that they want to pass their energy on to, they actually can pass it along physically. And it can be passed by breath, it can be passed by touch. And those masters that want to give that to someone, there is that process that they go through, and it actually is absorbed physiologically and mentally by the student. So I found that quite interesting.
Yeah, it is absolutely fascinating. It's one of those things that until you've actually had it done to you, probably sort of find you might be a bit skeptical about it. I mean, I've got to be honest, I didn't really hold up. When I first went for my first Reiki session, I wasn't sure exactly what was going to happen. And if you told me before what was going to happen, then I probably wouldn't have believed it. And it's the same when you get attuned. It's quite strange. You can feel the energy going through you, and you can feel your hands suddenly, you know, alighting with heat and energy. It's one of those things. It's very difficult to explain.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things you just have to experience, really, I think.
There is a wonderful story that you put in this novel, The Reiki Man, which is a murder mystery, but it's more than just a murder mystery. There is a lot of history and different points of information that you have woven into the complex plot that you have put together. And one of the characters that you bring in is an elderly man by the name of Suri. And he's a master healer, and he's just amazing. And he had come into Mulholland's life and the life of another individual, and had such a phenomenal impact on them that it totally transformed their lives. Now, Suri, is this a character that is based on a real person, or is this someone that came to life for you as you were writing?
I think he probably more came to life for me as I was writing it. I knew that I wanted to have an Indian mystic in there. Obviously, from the story of the temple in India and Tibet, and I was trying to think of, you know, what would the monks be like, and I imagined them as kind of Indian swamis or Tibetan monks, stuff like that. And then I thought perhaps they could, you know, go between temples. So I think because it was set, because I had this Burmese connection from my dad, mm-hmm. in the war, I felt that I'd have it in Burma and have the Indian guy. It's difficult to explain where ideas come from. They just sort of come to you as you're writing, really.
Mm-hmm. True. Now, you have a Professor Charlo Miles, who is quite an interesting character, loves his wine, knows about an event called Romano 8, which is a very special happening. But there is so much that is involved, integrated in the mystical, in the unusual. And the ghost keeps showing up. And, of course, wherever the ghost shows up, somebody ends up dead.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think it's... all stories have to have a bad guy, don't they? Although,
oh, absolutely.
I'm not sure that he doesn't see himself as bad. He sees himself as an avenging angel, I think, against the West,
mm-hmm.
for past crimes or seen as crimes in the past, which obviously comes out later in the book, why he does what he does and why he's so anti the West.
Another one of the characters in your book that I found extremely interesting, you don't have the CIA, but you have the M16, the British Secret Service, and there is a woman who is given a particular title that's not something I think many women would want, but anyway, you have to read the book to find out about it. But her name is Helen Johnson, and I thought, holy Joseph, now you bring in the British Secret Service, you've got the ghost, who is this Asian personality that is just incredibly disciplined and very skilled on multiple levels. And you have your detective, your civilian bodyguard for the man that's murdered, Mulholland. Her name is Stella. You have Brennan, who is an older police officer who is very practical, down to earth. And you keep bringing in these characters, and Helen Johnson, she's the type of female you'd love to hate.
Yes, I think she is. Yeah, I won't say how I described her in the book. But
no, I think somebody needs to read it to really find out about her choice or parts of personality.
Yeah, but I think she's kind of, I suppose, based on the head of MI6, there was a female head of MI6 quite a few years ago in England, but I don't know if she's as bad as Helen Johnson was, but I just sort of, you know, she fitted in there as what I would imagine the head of MI6 would be like.
Mhm. And then the box keeps coming up, And this box has a tremendous significance. Of course, you have to read the book to find out about it. But you do put out symbols in the book, Reiki symbols, and the one is called Siaihiki, and it means God and humanity one. And then there's some of the others, Honshazi Shonen, which is may the Buddha in me connect with the Buddha in you to create peace and harmony. And this is something for him. I mean, all of these little tidbits that you bring into the book, it really makes for fascinating reading. And it wouldn't surprise me if people, after reading your mystery, The Reiki Man, become interested in this practice because you share so many aspects of it.
Yeah, I think that's what I set out to do, really. I've always been into my writing. I've always wanted to write a fiction thriller. But I also, I think when I started to do Reiki, I thought, oh, this would make a fantastic story. If I can get people interested in it through fiction, then it would be a good idea. The two seem to come together for me, really. I have been, not everybody wants the Reiki symbols out there, to be honest, but they're available to see on the internet and in most Reiki books, so there wasn't really much point in not putting them in there. Because people, if you're not attuned to the symbols, then you can't use them. So but some traditional Reiki people are a bit funny about it, but, you know, we're moving on in society now, and it's better to be open and honest, isn't it, I think, about things, rather than to keep things secret.
Well, so many different disciplines have been coming forth, like Qigong. I know of a Qigong master that spent 20 years to become as accomplished as he is. He's extremely disciplined as an individual. And he designed a form of Qigong for the average person. He said, we can't hide this anymore. And I think that by your bringing out this story that has this phenomenal mystery involving so many different multiples, and it incorporates the Reiki so well, I really like one paragraph you have in here. You say, the problem is that some Reiki masters are very secretive with their knowledge. It's almost as if they're scared of too many people learning what they know. They hold back information under the pretense that it's dangerous to learn too much about Reiki without understanding it properly. But I think the real issue is about power and control. And I thought those were extremely powerful words. And I've known many people in many different disciplines that will say, there might be something that I feel someone might be in need of learning how to work with in the proper way, because nobody's going to want to learn how to use a buzzsaw without getting instructions on how to do it first. And so many of these disciplines do have a tremendous potential, if it's misused, for harm. So I can understand certain positionings. But you have a very strong feeling about wanting to share knowledge, and your words being transparent, I think, really are words that people want to hear at this time, because they feel too many things have been hidden for too long.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and I think that's the way we're heading now as a society, as humanity, I hope, is for more transparency. I'm the actual company that took me on, O-Books, the publisher. They work on a transparency. I'm mixing up my words here, Donna, sorry.
Well, it is late in London.
Yeah, we're a very transparent company. There's no, we don't hold back with any of the authors. We have an authors forum where all the publishers, Right from the MD downwards, everybody has their input and nobody talks behind anybody's back. It's all there for everybody to see, and I like that, and that's what I want to see more of. Like you say, there are too many secrets, and I can see a point that you don't want to tell people to give somebody a knife, do you, and not teach them how to use it to cut, you know, give somebody a knife to cut bread. You don't want to be cutting up people, I don't know if I explained that very well. I, like you say, I'm tired.
Well, you're going to be able to just turn around and go to bed pretty soon. I appreciate you staying up so late in London to be able to be with us. What is your website, Dominic, so my listeners, if they want to explore and find out more about this fascinating story, The Reiki Man, which, by the way, yeah, I'm sure you're going to have a sequel to this because it ended in a way. But the mystery is not going to be totally and completely solved, but if you want to be intrigued with something, this is a marvelous book that has some fascinating twists and turns, as I said earlier. What's your website, Dominic?
My website is www.dominiccjames.com.
DominicCJames.com. Well, there you have it. And if you love murder mysteries, if you want an interesting plot, if you feel your life is boring, you need to get this book, because I guarantee you it will be riveting on so many different levels. Dominic James, thank you so much. It's a delight to chat with you, and I look forward to the sequel.
No, thank you, Donna.
My pleasure. The Reiki Man, fascinating read. Donna Sebo here. We're leaving London. We're coming back to the USA, and we'll be taking a break and be back with you in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, then give me a call at our toll-free telephone number of 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you're a first-time listener, all you need to know is I just want your first name or your initial. Of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. And then let me tell you what I perceive about you and what's going on in your life right now. And then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that may be of interest to you. Again, 888-627-6008. Quickly, I wanted to let those of you who are listening in New York, I want you to know that I'm going to be in the Big Apple next week. I'll be there the 14th and 15th, and then I'll be coming back to the Pacific Northwest before I go to Alaska. And I'll be there from the 19th to the 23rd in Fairbanks and Anchorage. And if anyone in any of those areas wants to meet with me privately, all you have to do is give me a call on my phone line, 253 582 800-282-5604, and we can schedule some time for one-on-one by phone or in person, whatever you would prefer. So I wanted to let you know about that. Also, if you are listening for the first time and you'd like to know about the guests that are coming up on the show, be sure you go into the show information, tap that button on BBS, and you'll find out who's coming up, as well as check out my newsletter. And you can do that by going to DelphiInternational.com and find out all kinds of good information. And I want to thank those of you who are sending me some of the most fabulous stories and videos and other such items that are just incredibly informative. And so as I can, I'm putting them in my newsletter and sharing them with the people that subscribe to my newsletter, which, of course, is free. So if you'd like to have it, just send me an email, let me know your email address, and I'll put you on my subscriber list. And again, that's Donna@DelphiInternational.com, or check out my website, DelphiInternational.com itself, and you can get more details, and you can see the newsletter because it's always posted every month. Do you believe in ghosts? This is a month, by golly, where the goblins and the witches stories and everything, we've got so many of them that we're going to be sharing with you this month, but kids have a blast with this, and one of the favorite costumes is looking like a ghost, and apparently kids just absolutely love this. They think it's so, so cool, but in countries surveyed around the world, apparently more than 50% say that they don't believe in them. And there's people, let's say from Brazil and other parts of the world, they say, that's a bunch of hooey. Well, unless you've experienced one, you're going to say that, perhaps. I don't say that, because I have seen spirits, ghosts. They do exist. And here in the Pacific Northwest, we've got all kinds of places that are haunted. So anyway, there are a lot of people that do believe in ghosts. And apparently more women believe in them than men do. And that, I think, is because women are typically a lot more sensitive in certain ways than men are. It's just the way our nervous systems are developed. So the funny thing is that after Malaysia, the U.S. is number two, not number one. Malaysia's number one, but the U.S. is number two in believing in ghosts. And I have to chuckle because with this one interview where they did this on ghosts, so many of the people had never seen one. And many of the responses were, I don't ever want to see it, but I know they're real. So it's really, really fun. The people that least believe in ghosts are in South Africa. I've told you about Malaysia and the U.S. Canada comes right after the U.S., then the Philippines, then Australia, then Russia. So we have those. And then in Spain and India, they're believed in. The United Kingdom, I would have thought the United Kingdom would have been much higher on the list, because every person I've ever known that's come from England always has some spooky stories to tell. So when it came in at a much lower level than, let's say, India, I was surprised. And also with China, I was surprised. But you never know who they interview. But those in Africa are the least when it comes to believing in spooks. Donna Sebo here. Give me a ring if you would like to chat, 888-627-6008. Well, when we were interviewing Dominic in London and we were talking about Reiki, that is a very nice compliment to what I'm going to be sharing with you right now, because one of the biggest challenges that is going on, I've received information about how there are so many different environments that are trying to take away the supplements. It seems like the pharmaceutical industry really wants to get into it. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. People have really started working with alternative forms of medicine because they find so much of what they consider the Western form or the allopathic level of medicine not coming up to par. And they say there's got to be a better way. Well, I have come across many physicians that will use whatever works. If it's something in Western medicine, great. If it's in Ayurvedic, they will use that. If it is homeopathic, they will use that. There are many physicians whose minds are not closed like steel boxes to how can we make someone well. They really believe in the principle of do no harm. how can we best assist the patients in front of us? Well, there are many others that don't have that attitude. And, of course, we want someone that is going to, one, love being a physician, and number two, and or a nurse or any kind of practitioner, but also open to different ideas. And I thought I would share with you something that I came across regarding a physician. And this is a physician who's an internist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York City. His name is Gary Ding, and he really believes in supplements. Now, there are a lot of doctors that don't. Most of them have absolutely no nutritional background or training to speak of. And he said he grew up in China, and he said in China, herbs and teas are medicine. They are not just taken for granted. But he said when he got his medical training, it was in the Western-based modalities. And he said he has a very strong attitude about supplements, that they do need to be studied and there do need to be some protocols. And when patients want to work with supplements and they're talking to him about it, he said sometimes supplements can actually be harmful, but we don't know enough about them. And he said something that he has found as a physician is that chemotherapy, when it's given to people, it causes a lot of nerve damage. And he said there's pain and there's tingling and numbness. And he said sometimes it is so bad that the chemo treatment has to be stopped. However, there has been quite a bit of research on a supplement called ALA, and that's alpha-lipoic acid. And he said with patients that have digestive tract cancer, an extract from a certain mushroom, which is Colorulus versicolor, seems to make the chemotherapy drugs work better. And he said there's some evidence that vitamin D or green tea extract may lower the risk of developing cancer. So he said the support for ALA and C versicolor extracts is stronger than for a lot of other supplements in his research evaluation. But he said, you know what, they know for a fact that the alpha-lipoic acid reduces the pain from nerve damage caused by diabetes. And there's a green tea ointment that has been approved for genital warts, and vitamin D may help ease chronic pain. Now, the reason I bring this out is that it's important for us, when we are trying to find a physician, to find someone that is going to be open to discussing things with you. Because wellness is really an issue that we have to take personal responsibility for. ALA is a magnificent supplement. From what I have been told by physicians that have been involved in utilizing it, it's one of these components that when you're younger, your body's producing it. As you get older, just like with digestive enzymes, it's not being produced by the body. So the supplementation is of tremendous benefit to the liver. It's extremely good for the liver. But it's like anything else. You don't take buckets of it. You take it as a supplement, and you listen to your body. And I really think that the more we can share information, the more we can be out there, understanding that there is so much available to us from different cultures and different environments. I think of the nurse from Canada who was given the recipe by a Native American to cure her cancer. It was an herb tea. He gave her the recipe. Among his tribe of people, this had been something they had utilized for generations as a cure. She was diagnosed with terminal cancer. She said, thank you very much, I'll take the recipe, and she ends up being cured of cancer. And as a nurse, she was really interested in the science behind it. She was from Canada. She goes back to Canada, and she's sharing it with people. And then she ends up going through a tremendous amount of agitation. She was put in jail. She gave it away. She gave the recipe away to people because she wanted them well. And they put her in jail for something like this. Her story is just amazing. The SEAC recipe is still out there, and it's still being used. one thing might work for someone else, it could be toxic for. And I think kinesiology is something that we can utilize more and more so we understand what's right for us and what isn't right for us. And that is a whole different subject. And I just think it is marvelous that we are in a position to communicate about different sources of information. Remember, you are able to discern what can be right for you. If you don't know, don't be afraid to ask. We all are going to learn and grow in our own way. But again, your health is vitally important. But I wanted to share those comments by that physician. Remember, common sense goes a long way here. There's no magic bullet, per se. What can you do to help yourself be well and be healthy? Be curious. Ask questions. Keeping yourself healthy is rule number one. Don't let yourself get so run down that you end up getting sick. And number two, read, listen, observe, be open to information. And remember, don't ever hesitate to question. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. When we come back, well, that phone line is open if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone line is open, 888-627-6008. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Nora Gadoudis, and we're going to be talking about her book, Primal Body, Primal Mind. This woman is a nutritionist, and her passion is empowering people for wellness, just what I was chatting with you about for a moment. Now, this is what's going to be going on tomorrow. We're going to be finding out what she has discovered in her research and where she is and how she works with people today one-on-one. So I hope you'll have a chance to tune in. And, of course, I'm going to be in the Big Apple next week, so we will have a broadcast coming from New York City next week, and all of that information is in show information on BBS. All you have to do is tap that and you'll find out more. I wanted to share a story with you about a woman by the name of Roberta Messner. This is a woman that went through a time in her life that is not very pleasant, and it involved divorce. All of us, at some time or another, either we've been in a divorce situation or we have known people that have gone through divorce situations, and it's like a death. There's a grieving, there's anger, there's frustration, there's all of these emotions that you go through. And she had to go through all of them. And she said she really just had it. And her husband, after 25 years of marriage, all of a sudden decided he was going to move to another state. And he bought a vintage plane, and he was just going to do whatever he wanted to do, didn't include her. Well, they had had problems in their marriage for a number of years, but so many times when you're in a marriage for that long, and you just maybe don't expect that your life is going to be transformed because your partner is suddenly going to fly the coop. Well, that's exactly what happened. And she said, I just went through so much with him. It's almost as if her husband never really grew up. And as he was growing older, in some ways, he became more and more childish. Well, finally, she just had it. That's it. So she ends up getting a divorce. And the lawyer's fees were just outrageous. She was left broke by her ex. And, of course, her health was suffering. She was on an emotional roller coaster. More than anything else, she was mad. And she said, it just absolutely was agitating her no end that this immature man that she'd been married to for 25 years just had no sense of responsibility, and consequently, she was left holding the empty bag filled with a lot of bills. Well, she kept getting sick. And, of course, when your emotions are that turbulent, when you've got that much resentment, the body really will go haywire. And that's what happened. That is really what was going on. So, one day, she had an aha. And she happened to see a box of pretty cards that she had, that actually a student had given her. And she said, you know what? I'm going to start writing something. So she decided she was going to write to someone she really appreciated, and the lady's name was Sandy. And she said, you make the biggest difference in patients' lives. I see it every day, especially with a specific patient. And thank you so much for just being who you are. Well, this woman that worked with her just was absolutely thrilled. She said, you have no idea how much this wonderful note meant to me. So she decided she was going to do something else. She was going to start writing notes to people about the good things that they did. And she said, I had been filled with so much anger and so much misery and so much resentment because of my ex-husband. She said, I was literally poisoning myself to death. So every time she wrote one of these nice cards, it was like something inside of her shifted. And she said, okay, I am moving on with my life. My husband has moved on with his. He's going to be ex. I'm moving on with mine. Well, with this change and shift in her attitude, the next time she went in to see her doctor, because she'd been seeing him quite regularly, she'd been sick so much, he said, I'm amazed. Your blood pressure has dropped 20 points. So she started thinking. She said, you know what? I have to let go the past. I have to build a new life. And I have to forgive my ex-husband. She said, my ex-husband's happy. He's enjoying life. He's living his life the way he wants to. She said, I was miserable because I was angry and I was resentful. She said, when I started to count my blessings instead of counting my grievances, I started getting well. She said, today I have been able to pay for a residence that I love. She said, my bills are all under control. I love my job. I love my work. And I'm free from the past. And I'm free from anger and free from resentment. I think that her story is so important because emotions are at the base, frequently, of illness. Sometimes we've had pain and suffering and hurt, and we just don't know what to do with it. And we just hold it inside, and it poisons us, like it did with Roberta. But she turned it around. She is a happy woman. She's a fulfilled woman. She is a woman that has a purpose in her life. She feels that she is in control now. And I think that is such a wonderful awareness. And I wanted to share it with you, because I don't know of anybody that doesn't go through hard times at one time or another. But it's when you can let go and you can move on with your life. And just a little thing, like writing a thank you card to people, just started to help her do that. Being grateful for where you are, for what you have, for who you are, can make a tremendous difference in your life. And more than anything else, it makes a difference in your attitudes that you express throughout whatever you do. Live life with joy. Live it with zest, because it's a marvelous gift. And remember, as I say every day at the end of my show, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Siebel. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.